Hi everyone, Shannon Gates here, getting you ready for our week 2 podcast. We have the recap with Josh Wigler coming up, and then we have some exit interviews. Unfortunately, Nova's interview couldn't happen due to scheduling, but we do have Susie and then we have Steven. So that's just the show notes, so you know, you can skip around to whatever you want to listen to. And yeah, enjoy the fun podcast. Hello everyone, and welcome to RITB's coverage of Australian Survivor. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about week 2, that's episodes 3 to 5 of Champions vs. Contenders 2.0, a lot of numbers in that, and I'm so excited because I have such a good guest to talk about a really fun week of Survivor. He's actually making his debut on the Know-It-Alls, and he is definitely a champion of RHAP, so please welcome Josh Wigler. Josh, thank you so much for being here.
I can't even contend with such a label. Oh my God. Shannon, thank you for having me. What a pleasure.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to say champions and contenders have been known to be arbitrary, but I meant it to you as a compliment.
Yeah, I'll take it. The RHA people's champion. So there are many of us. There are many of us. But no, I'm stoked to be here. Not only my first time on the Know-It-Alls, but I believe my first time talking international Survivor in any quote unquote official capacity. And I am almost positive that this is the first time you and I have been on a podcast together.
It is. Believe me, I know. I'm very excited about it. So
yeah, great. Yeah. That's great.
It's awesome to have you on. Last time we just had pizza in New York. That was also really fun. But getting on live to talk to you. We actually talked a lot of international Survivor there as well, but just not on mic.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And you got to witness firsthand what everybody else is about to experience, which is that I am a massive casual when it comes to international Survivor. I'm finally starting to understand the ultra fan distinction that was posited not terribly long ago by a certain golf freelancer, freelance writer. And I think that I think I've figured out the tiers if you want to hear them.
Definitely.
So I think that you could just be a fan of Survivor. Like, you like it when it's on, you'll watch it, you won't do any thinking about it. Otherwise, maybe you're going to skip an episode and it's not the end of the world, or skip a season. Just a fan. That's like just a baseline fan. Maybe even if you want to call that the casual fan, I'm fine with that. The super fan is the person who has watched every season, who has potentially rewatched seasons, gets into the podcasts, listens to the podcasts, reads Dalton Ross, what have you. That's the super fan. And I think the ultra fan is the person who does all of that, plus watches all of International Survivor, goes into the international weeds, knows all of these seasons and all of these players by heart. And it's not me, but I try where I can. It's not like I've never watched an international season of Survivor before. I watched the legendary Survivor South Africa before the one that you and Mike are currently talking about, though I will be catching up in time to talk to you guys later in the season. And I've seen some Australian Survivor as well. I've watched a decent amount of the first one. I watched all of the People's Champion Luke's first season. And I missed last season, so this is my first Champions versus Contenders, which I think I'm not mad about, because I'm really, really enjoying this format. And I wonder, and you tell me, would that still be the case if I had seen the first Champions versus Contenders?
I quite enjoyed last year, but I do think the pre-merge was kind of what let it down. It had a really fun post-merge, but I mean, this first 5 episodes, I think, blow that first 5 out of the water. Especially last season, there was, you know, 2 episodes in the first week, and then the second week was 4 episodes, and they were just brutal, long, there were quits. It was so bad. That was not a great week of Survivor, so that was hard to get through. This was a fun week, you know, 3 tribal councils with some fun votes happening. Like, in terms of, you know, stacking up the first 3 episodes, this is way better. There's so much more to go, right? It'd be like halfway through in terms of, like, actual minutes watched if it was US Survivor. But, you know, there's a lot more episodes to go, so we'll see how it goes. But yeah, this is stacking up to be better with the small amount we've seen.
I mean, I should walk it back a little bit that I did watch some of the first Champions versus Contenders.
No wonder you stopped if it was the first few episodes.
Yeah, Russell got voted out, and I felt like I'd seen all that I needed to see. I was like, okay, I could sleep better at night knowing that this night, that this nightmare, this international nightmare, is over. But yeah, I'm really liking this season so far. The first five episodes have been very action packed. I'm reminded of what you can do with a 90 minute Survivor episode, and wouldn't that be just spectacular if that's something that we got in America? I've only heard the rumors. That would be really, really incredible. But just the production value that goes into Australian Survivor really is it's astonishing. The level of ingenuity in the challenge design. If I haven't already said, the cinematic quality of things like the flashbacks to what their lives are like before they got out there to Fiji, and getting to like cut back and see what they're like in the real world. It's just such a nice touch with like the epic roaring music that crashes down on them like the waves. It's just very, very epic, and clearly it's associated with a very epic theme in terms of pitting champions versus contenders, whether or not you fully buy into the distinctions. So I'm enjoying it. I'm liking it a lot. The best part of all, people get voted out, and so far they stay that way. So I'm already enjoying this season of Australian Survivor more than I've enjoyed any Survivor in 2019 thus far.
Yes, I mean, I don't know anyone who would agree with that take from you. But yeah, I mean, sometimes people do get voted out and stay in the game in Australian Survivor. But, you know, I talk about this all the time with US and Australia. And look, Australia's formatting, it does have its problems. Like, it's probably too long. And there do have to be non-eliminations often because of that. But it's like, with Australia, I get it. Like, we are fighting for our lives all the time, you know? We might not get another season. We're fighting in the ratings. Whereas, like, the US, I know, is, you know, it's always going to be renewed. So I expect them to do what is best. And Australian Survivor, I really do feel, is doing what it can do to be its best self while also keeping a lot of commercial interests in mind, which is very important to us. Like, we need to stay on the air, and we're against the block. It's really hard.
Yeah, I do think that three episodes a week is crazy.
It's a lot.
You know, it's a lot of Survivor, and I like Survivor quite a bit. Obviously, I've been talking about it for a minute, but three a week is a lot. It's very, very daunting. And this is the first time that I've been in on a season of Australian Survivor from the ground up. I usually wait. I wait for some episodes to stockpile. I wait for there to be like a window of time in my summer where I could just like sit down and get through everything. And this time, I had warned you in advance when you reached out to me to do the podcast, like, we should do it early because there's a strong chance that I'm just not going to be able to catch up at a certain point, especially if I've got South Africa in my future. And I'm really glad that I'm in on it from the ground floor. I feel like I'm pacing with the intended momentum of the show. But I do think that three a week is a lot. I do think especially the game design of Australian Survivor, it's so long. And in the first season, I felt like it had real negative game impacts where you would have people who were trying to play sort of that modern Survivor game getting clipped really fast because it's just such a longer game that you have to pace it differently. So that can lead, or at least it did in my opinion, to some of the earlier episodes of the first one that I watched being a little less than exciting. And I know that it kind of inspired some of the mateship antics that ended up flowing out later on in the season. But here, it's kind of defying my expectations so far, where obviously I'm a big fan of the People's Champion Luke. I'm so thrilled to see him back here. But in that context, and with all that I knew from Champions versus Contenders round one, being that the one guy who is sort of the infamously erratic player, Russell Hantz, got voted out second, I see Luke coming back into the game as the only Survivor veteran and being like, oh, great. So we're going to waste Luke on this season where he's just going to get voted out second or third. And so far, things are working out. So I'm a happy man. And there are a lot of other characters that are starting to pop. Really, for me, especially on that Champions tribe, which is a surprise for me. I think that I would have expected to be like all the way in on Contenders. And through five episodes, the fact that the Champions have gone to Tribal four out of the five times, for me, is a surprise. Is it a surprise for you?
Yeah, I mean, last year was very much like the champions were the winners, as champions should be. This time, I guess, like, they're older. I mean, look, they're trying to stack it sometimes in the champions' favor. We're going to talk about the football challenge with the football players a bit later on, but they're trying their best, and there's a lot of brute strength, which maybe age wouldn't factor into because the champions are older. But yeah, it's a very, very different storyline to last time. And I do think with Luke, I couldn't have had lower expectations. Like, he was coming in as the only returning player. I was scared because of the Russell thing. And then also I thought, like, he's not going to fit in with these athletes and everything, which he actually, I guess, didn't because he wasn't in that alliance. But man, he has blown me out of the water in terms of just exceeding those expectations. And I like, let's talk about the strategy. Let's get into these episodes because, as I said, three really fun episodes. And
yeah,
the first episode, episode three, was for me the best one. Like, that was so fun. Like, how often do you get to see genuine strategy, people using relationships to pull two people over in this massive flip? We were cheering on my couch for sure, because like, to see that huge strategic move, to see then later on people having genuine emotions and betrayal, like, that's the kind of survivor I want to see. And obviously Luke was spearheading it. We'll talk about it, but I think all of that alliance played really, really well there. For me, it was like exhilarating survivor to watch.
You know, it's not a one for one match, and the way that the power balances shifted in this regard back in the day, it was different. It was a tiebreaker, and it ended up being like I think it was literally like a survival quiz that got Dr. Carl out of Survivor Africa. But this kind of reminded me of those Samburu tribe dynamics from Survivor Africa, where you had like Frank leading the charge on the quote unquote older people alliance versus those young whippersnappers in Gen X to really date Survivor Africa, where they thought that they had Silas, where Frank thinks that he has Silas, who is like the young hot stud of the younger half of the Samburu tribe. And it turns out that Silas is I think he's got like more of like a much more mischievous bent than anything that's happening with the people in the sporting alliance on the champions. But it reminded me, it was sort of like the arc that flowed from episode three and onward, reminded me of a similar dynamic of like these people who thought that they just had like a really solid, loyal, strong thing, suddenly feeling fairly agitated and jilted by the fact that they did not. And the reason that they did not was nothing more offensive than these people played Survivor. These people played the game, they played it well, and they were able to get I loved how Fishback took the take right out of my mouth of Ross being Ian McShane. I mean, he really is Ian McShane from Deadwood, just like playing a surfer dude. And we're able to convince him. Your winner pick, right, Abby, mm-hmm. was also multiple on this vote. And it was done really well, and it was done brilliantly by Janine, whose life was on the line, and she advocated for herself so well. I was so impressed by her tribal council performance. So I was sad to see Susie go. She seemed like she was going to be a good character. But I wasn't like that upset, especially when the stakes were her versus Janine. Janine is somebody who has really started to pop for me, and somebody who I'm really, really rooting for. I'm really rooting for a lot of the people on the champions, just to spoil my takes.
That whole six are really fun to me. Janine.
They're great. Yeah. One of my favorite groups of survivors in a long time.
There's no real weak spots in that group of six. And Janine, I agree. I want to talk about all four of the friendly four, or what I call the friendly four, but what Luke was calling the fun alliance. Also very apt, maybe doesn't roll off the tongue so much, but to start with Janine.
Yeah, but that's branding. Who are we to deny the king of the jungle? It's the fun alliance.
We could probably do better. I don't know. Well, yeah, Janine. She was great here. She's obviously a really good speaker. I don't know if you know, but she needs to do negotiations in her real life. She mentioned that 1 or 2 or 10 times.
Yeah, 500.
Yeah. And I do love that Janine can champion shame, because she's so successful that she can be like, is that what a champion would do? Like, she did that a lot in Tribal Council, which I found really fun. I thought that she and Luke did really well to appeal to athletes with sports metaphors, like, who do you want on the bench, which was great. She talked about how it's never one person kind of losing the challenge. You do it as a team, which was really great. She had a lot of good strategic skills here. She also said, you know, you're acting like a bunch of contenders, which is like the Natalie Cole David thing again coming up.
I saw you tweet that. I thought that was really funny and accurate. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've, you know, in the X interviews, which are coming up, you know, Ross says he didn't want to put her name down specifically, which is what Steven told me. So she was doing a lot here that I thought was really, really great. And I thought that it was a bad play for the athletes to make her the name. Because, well, I mean, A, she showed how good she is strategically, but B, dangerous position to set a precedent of like, well, she screwed up this one challenge. She's not a weak person, but she screwed up this one challenge. So we're going to get like immediate unnecessary retribution. Anyone can screw up one challenge. And if you're setting that precedent, it could put, you know, anyone on the chopping block. And obviously some people didn't want to put down her name compared to someone like Apia, who was already kind of in line to, you know, maybe go home earlier in the season. Maybe that would have flown better. So I just think Janine, she played really, really well here.
Well, and to that point, and it's why I'm glad, so glad for so many reasons that things are breaking the way that they're breaking over on the Champions Tribe is, look, that's just who the athletes are. And this is just how that athlete alliance views Survivor and how it's supposed to be played. And there are like the worst case scenario versions of a season of Survivor, at least for me, where that's the type of thinking and the type of group that gets in control. That's when you just find yourself in a really uninteresting pagonging situation.
Which is what they wanted, you know, definitely.
Exactly. And so, of course, it's going to make sense that that's why they target Janine and that's why they single Janine out without thinking about these other points that you're raising. Pia, somebody who had already been in consideration before, but Janine screwed up this week. So maybe we should be going after Janine and not considering at all, like, you know, not taking into account other people's thoughts within their own alliance. As that explodes out from this, from the consequences of this, that's because, as we see by the subsequent vote outs after Susie, maybe these people just aren't that good at Survivor. It's possible. Sad to see Nova go supernova so fast. And, you know, Steven at the very least was kind of like this very recognizable, antagonistic type that was starting to develop. And that's one recognizable player off the board for me, as I'm going to now have to struggle to remember the 900 other players that he leaves behind. But I think that this was a cautionary tale. What we saw happen here in these episodes of Champions versus Contenders is you can run the game like that. It has been successful. But the downside is once things slip out of your grasp the way that they did for the sporty types, for the sporty spices, is that I think that it becomes very difficult to get a foothold back in. And I think for a wide variety of reasons, the group that Steven had helped put together, they just biffed it pretty hard.
Maybe Luke's alliance should be named after one of the other Spice Girls. You know, if they're sporty Spice, maybe they should be Ginger Spice because they're actually spicy. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, look, Luke's alliance, the Fun Alliance, was in a similar position last week when they were on the other side of the numbers. And there was strategic chops there from pretty much every person in that alliance, definitely within those four, to the point where 1 week later, and yes, like 100 episodes later, but it is still just the, you know, a few days later, they have the numbers, they've kicked off most of that alliance. The rest of the alliance that's still there is voting with them out of desperation. They have 2.5 idols between them. Like, they made up some groundwork in a way that the Sporty Spice Alliance really could not. Like, once they lost the numbers, it was like, we cannot recover from this. So it's a good alliance to beat because they can really, I think, just, you know, play one way. And once that's taken from them, it's like basically they're, you know, there for the taking. And I there was so much good stuff here. I mean, to go back to my boy Luke, what a perfect week for him. I mean, he, I felt, was leading a lot of it. He obviously pulled Ross over with their little banana bandits thing that they have going, that little really fun duo, Luke and Ross.
That was great. It's like, I'll know I can trust you if you steal a banana from me. It's a great thing that every edition of Survivor should be stealing moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, those two people are crazy. Like, they would work together well because they're both insane people who connect on that level. Don't love that the couple name is Lost, but, you know, Lost for the win is, I think, what we're saying. So he pulls over Ross. He was really, really good, I thought, in, like, appealing to Abby. They all were, in talking about how, like, this was for her and everyone has a voice, which is what she was particularly upset about, you know, being dictated to. Obviously, she had a supreme connection with David, who pulled her off with, you know, abs and charm, which no one can argue against. And then again, Pia not being the target. And I do think that was somewhat through relationships she had on the champion side. Certainly Susie talked about that in my exit interview with her. And I think that Janine wasn't as attractive a target. So for Pia to Slip Under the Radar, I think, was helpful too. So these four together in that vote were almost like Black Widow Alliance good for me, you know, in the Eric vote. Obviously, nothing's that good, but like they all had their role to play and they all did it so perfectly. And that's why they could pull off a very, 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 very difficult move.
I'm enjoying it while we can because I expect that, you know, things will get shaken up soon enough. And if things are trending the way that they are, the champions are in trouble. I mean, three in a row, four of the first five tribal councils. It's not great. And even within the current permutation of the champions, can't you see the scenario where things shake up again? Like, I mean, we're left with four people still from the original Sporty Alliance. Plus the Fun Alliance, there could be like some sort of, I don't know, there could be some sort of civil war still within the champions. The good news, if that's the case, is that there are three idols in the possession of the Fun Alliance. Mm-hmm. So you would hope that something could work out. But if that foursome is able to stick together for a while through this game, this is going to be an incredibly fun season to watch. My fingers, you can't see them, are crossed very, very tight. At the moment, hoping that that is the case, because I really love every single individual member of this crew. I think that Pia is fantastic. Luke is established as fantastic. We've talked about Janine as well. We haven't much talked about David yet, who is what a character. Oh, my God. Who reminds me a lot just physically of Rob Zabaknik,
yeah,
from Survivor Thailand. You know, looks like a much less douchey version of Rob Zabaknik, though has like some douche charm of his own, sort of like the Sawyer from Lost variety. He is a blast, and his whole gambit, kind of also looks like Gambit from X-Men. His whole gambit with the fake idol for the actual contender idol thing was the future will bear out whether or not that was the right move, but it was just such a tricky and clever move that I kind of don't care. I'm just so glad it happened.
Yeah, for me, I mean, David is amazing casting. He's a good player, but also I think maybe not a good player, you know, in some of the things he was doing.
Right. It's hard to know yet. Like, he's sort of like, that's sort of how I felt about Henry.
Yes, I was about to make that comparison. He's the Van Hen of the season.
There's like, well, there's times where you're like, oh man, what a brilliant, brilliant player. And then other times where like, that is unnecessarily risky. Like when Henry like volunteered to tribe hop, it was like, you really don't have to do that. It's really not something that you absolutely have to do. I see your five-dimensional chess, but sometimes it's fine to just play regular chess. And this was sort of the move that he made this week. He was so desperate to get an idol that he does it in a way that is going to, you know, very potentially moving forward, burn Sean pretty bad, or at least could potentially burn his relationship with Sean, and could even expose the fact that he has an idol. Because if Sean somehow survives whatever happens, plays a fake idol, and has the wherewithal to be like, okay, well, this is why I have the fake idol, and this means that this person has a real idol, that could really blow up fairly badly for David. But as somebody with no real skin in the game other than Luke has to make it to the very end and win, then I really don't care, because it's going to be great television no matter how it shakes out, almost guaranteed. So I'm so happy that whole thing played out. And the idol that David made looked really good, Shannon. I thought he did a great job. I would have been convinced.
Too many skulls on the season. I didn't think I'd ever have to say that, but just wait. You know, when he had the sentence, he was like, I've taken the skull from, I was like, oh my God, where is he going with this sentence? And he was like, the tree male. I was like, oh, thank God. You know, I didn't know if it was going to be like my enemies or something, you know, but,
Right. my enemy, the tiny bull that has just been bothering me here on the beaches of Fiji. What was it even doing here? But I don't mind that. I think it's something that American Survivor has tried to do more and more. If there is like a Bob Crowley effect, it's the fact that he yanked so much stuff off of production design along the way and was able to create very compelling fake idols as a result. And I think that there is an effort to gussy up the material that is in the possession of these castaways, just in case they want to do something creative like this. And I don't think that American Survivor typically hands out a whole lot of skull heads, like bull skulls to make your own fake idols. But maybe they should, because this one ends up looking so realistic maybe like the twine that it's around to me was like, that's a little thick. It's a thick twine. maybe it needs to be just like a little bit of a thinner twine. But the skull is as your centerpiece is a real, it's a masterstroke. It looked very good. The masterstroke obviously was the paper that it was wrapped in, where now like you really have no reason to disbelieve other than the fact that like you can't trust anybody in this game. But insofar as you could trust somebody's circumstances, everything is like lining up. And I guess maybe there is a reason, and perhaps you can clarify for me why Sean would be incentivized to take David at face value.
Yeah, well, I mean, people have been talking about the connection, like, does David know Megan Gale, who's a supermodel, just because they're models? I mean, I don't know if that's true. I'm still not really sure how they connected. Maybe they've watched a lot of US Survivor and they knew who was most likely to have idols, which is just basically like the tallest, best looking alpha male. And that worked out for them, even though Janine had found the idol. I don't know. Was Sean going around just saying, I got it, to every person in the challenge? That was amazing that they made that connection. But look, for David, I hate the move.
When you get the chance, I want you to dig in. I want you to find out the answer. I want the scoop of how that connection was made. It was pretty uncanny.
It was very confusing. But look, I hate the move from David. From a strategic point of view, in terms of entertainment, exceptional entertainment, and that's where the Zen-Hen comparison comes back. Like, I love Henry, and I used to compare Henry to JT. To be fair, this was before Game Changers, so it was only just the one token teens, and then heroes versus villains that I was looking at, and I compared them because I thought, you both are so good at this game. You have skills for the game. If you do nothing, you have the charm, the social game, the physical ability to be good at the game. But you have to do the crazy things, like, and I feel like David, we've seen his skills this week. Like, he has extreme charm. He has extreme skills for the game. He really does. But this move was just crazy. I mean, you don't know on the other side what Sean's power is. You don't know if he's going to find you out. You don't know who he could influence. I mean, that's most of the players right there, right? You haven't met any of them. If they find you out, your name could be Mud. These are people you're probably going to need later on, considering the champions are losing numbers. So one idol that can protect you one time is absolutely not worth burying your name for, with all the contenders. If that comes up, like, it's a dangerous position. And as you said, Sean has so much intel on him. He knows now that he has an idol, so that's something he could blow up. He's put a lot of power into Sean's hands, who is someone he's never met, but greatly, greatly pissed off. I think that even if he didn't have access to an idol, and we'll talk about Janine's decision as well in this, but even if he didn't have access to an idol, and the only way to get Sean's idol was to make a fake one, it would still be the wrong move. Like, there is no way that doing this, especially in week two of a 50-day game, the person's not winning Survivor. Like, it's way too big a move. And we see the way that it's kind of all going to his head. And look, I loved a lot of what he did this week. I really didn't like this. And I feel like the downfall is coming at a point. Just not sure when yet.
I think if this was American Survivor and it was a 39-day game and we were 5 votes into that. And
there
were
was edge
looking
of extinction.
At, yeah, well, sure. But if we were looking ahead towards a merge or something like that, and you're like the alpha type, like David is, who's just, you think of the meat shields and you think of people who might be vulnerable at the merge, even though I think thankfully that type of thinking is shifting, then I like it a little more. And I still think that there could be some creative results that come from this. I'm very open-minded to somebody who is going to be thinking as bigly as that. Bigly. Oh, my God. I can't believe I brought that word into this. I'm sorry to dirty up your Australian Survivor podcast. But somebody who is thinking as creatively as that, who has as much of an ambitious vision as
ambitious.
David seems to have. It's probably too ambitious. It's probably too much. It very likely will blow up on him. But I'm not mad at it because I think it will be very fun if it blows up on him. And if the risk pays off, was it ultimately worth it for the long? This is a much longer game. And it is very early to be pulling off moves like this. But I'm hesitant to get onto your podcast and discourage this type of behavior because I'd like to see more of it in future seasons.
But the weight of idols in Australian Survivor is just, it's so much less important than in US Survivor. Shorter game, more idols to be found. You can kind of work your way to the end, just kind of clinging to idol after idol. Sure. That's not what we see in the Australian game. And social relationships, much more important. And we're going to talk about the contenders later, but apparently Sean is at the top of those contenders. So just why would you, that's just so dangerous to kind of maybe have a negative relationship there before you've even met these people. Look, if he's Steve Bradbury, you need the idol 100%. You have to do this. It's a desperate measure. But for David, who's in a seemingly really good position on his tribe, he didn't need an idol. He wanted an idol. And I think that he burned a lot of people to get it. And look, Janine, who's someone I sung her praises a few minutes ago, she doesn't escape me from this either. Like, I don't know what she's trying to do. I mean, look, we saw on the note, it said that it's just a contender idol for a contender tribal council. Now, to explain, last season, the champions and contenders did swap quite late, but when they swapped, they were still called champions and contenders. And if you were on that tribe, no matter where you came from in life, you were a contender. So I think Janine might be hoping to get to a swap and be a contender, or have, you know, a Luke or whatever as a contender, and they can use it in a way that just is her idol. I would rather just, you know, A, make a friend by, you know, having this cool twist that allows you to build relationships. B, have an actual idol in your pocket. I don't think it was a good move for her to hang on to it. It looks like there was, you know, some opportunity to make the switch in ways that, you know, it, obviously don't do it if it's going to be too risky. But if right. there was an opportunity, I think do it. Make a friend. You're down in numbers. You're going to need these contenders. And get an idol in your pocket. I mean, yeah, just to have this kind of fake idol now, I think was definitely a conservative move. And I, you know, while David went way too big, I think she went too small with it.
Did he fully explain to her what he was doing? Because I thought that that was part of it, where he's like, I've got something really cool in mind. It's going to be great. I can't tell you everything, but I promise you it's going to be good. Did she not fully understand exactly what David was putting together?
I mean, look, she is completely guilty by association in that she gave her note.
Even if that's the case, yeah, like, even if that's the case, like, she didn't do her due diligence, which is bad business, Janine. You should know. This is bad business. You should vet the plan a little deeper.
Yeah, you're only as good as your worst employee. But also beyond that, I think her actual plan, which was I'm going to hold on to it and not swap it, was in itself bad. So
right.
I don't like this either.
We assume that Janine's idol that she currently possesses is powerless in her current standing.
It is.
Right? Like, so, if she's here at the Champions Tribe, it's not going to do anything for her. But maybe, like, she and David can coordinate ahead of any potential swap of, like, let's keep tabs on where the other person lands. If you, David, swap over to contenders, we got to do a quick idol swap, something like that, before we move mats, something like that.
What if they're both contenders? Like, anything can happen, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. I think you're right that the juice isn't worth the squeeze. You've convinced me, but I'm thrilled that it happened. And I love this twist. This is the first time that this has happened.
Yeah, so fun, right? Like, go Australia. Great. Amazing twist.
Australian Survivor comes up with some really, really cool stuff. And this is one of them. I think, you know, I'm sure we'll get that other situation where you're going to vote somebody on to the other tribe. And it's like, oh, just kidding. It wasn't actually an elimination. You were just voting somebody onto a different tribe and they're safe for 1 week. And that's never my favorite thing, even if it has spared some great people. Shout out to my Dan's Nick. But like, I don't know. That's not my favorite thing. But this kind of deal, it's a very clever implementation of delivering idols into the game and fostering cross tribal relationships.
Well, you probably should be.
Well, it is still, you're fostering a cross tribal relationship. It's just, surprisingly, you're creating an unnecessary rivalry.
Toxic relationship.
Yeah, but I like that. I think it's dynamic television. So I'm thrilled that this has happened. I think it's going to be great. I mean, I think that, like, the story potential that leaks out from a moment like this is very, very high. So I'm thrilled about it. I think it's really, really fun.
They should. Yeah. US should be stealing this. I think that what production had anticipated was that Janine would talk to John like Survivor China style, right? And then when she didn't, which I guess she didn't even want to share it with the contenders ever. And also, it did feel like he was kind of like the focal point of the group. I don't know how she would have done that. But when they didn't, I feel like they just kind of like plopped it like right in Sean and Daisy's path, being like, we need you to also know about it so this whole interaction can happen. Because that was like he wasn't even looking for it. It was just like at his feet. So I feel like that's why production had to do that.
Right. I think maybe also David feels some idol envy because he went looking for the idol with the King of the Jungle, Luke. And he technically, while watching that scene, David's the guy who found the idol, and he lifted it up, and then Luke just like grabbed it from his hand, and nobody like really contended the point. But I mean, David found the idol. And then Luke just kind of took it and David sort of just allowed it. So maybe David's kicking himself a little bit. He's like, Luke's idol should technically be my idol.
But that was the right move, you know? Like, that was good because, I mean, look, it wasn't just that he was the one who found it. Like, he kept saying to Luke, he was like, I think it's there. And Luke's like, nah, like, that definitely was, like, the perfect description. So, like, he really did find it. But it was Luke's clue. Luke does take it. And, like, a tight ally that he has with Luke is that's much more important than an idol. So a good thing to not steal it and kind of, like, upset that relationship. David even talks in this 3 episodes that we watched about how the social game is the whole point, and he's laughing at Steve. And a few minutes later, he's stealing an idol to ruin his social relationship with 11 people in the game. Like, it made no sense. Idols are not more important than social relationships. Okay, fine. They're not more important than social relationships on Australian Survivor. So that's why I didn't like it.
That scene in episode 2 where Abby and Steven have had their blow up and Abby is crying on the beach and like the whole fun alliance just like rolls up and is like, what happened? What happened? And she tells him, and then they all just like roll up on Steve was so overdramatic and hysterical, like really like overplaying the older sibling, beating up the school bully bit. It was hysterical. It was so fun. And Nova being there, being like, I was there, like nothing was over the line. Like, I mean, like it was tense, but it wasn't over the line. Were you sad to see Nova go? We haven't really eulogized any of the 3 players in closer detail to them. Were you sad to see Steve, Nova, Susie, any of them particularly?
Yeah, mostly Steve and Nova. I know that Steve has been getting a lot of hate online, but you know what? He was a very interesting character.
He's a good character, I agree.
Yeah, like he was bringing some really interesting stuff to the show. I thought Nova really was as well. Susie seems like a nice girl. But sure, I mean, the Chizzy might be cursed. We'll talk about it later, but Steve did get 6 points last week and Nova got 4. So whoops on that one. You know, the game changes. To be fair, that was very, very many episodes ago, but the game changes very quickly.
It's a hard system that you've implemented because, you're dealing with 3 episodes every week. So
immediately dethroned in the next episode, like just episode 3. So.
No, it's true. But I feel like it's a hard game. It's a hard system that you've established here.
Yeah. Okay, I want to talk about this confrontation. The first thing is Abby and Ross, they flipped. Did you like this move from them to flip on what was like, you know, the first week of the game?
I don't know. I think when you have such a sure thing, maybe you want to ride it through. But I do think it's a testament to human nature and the social piece of Survivor being the thing that should be weighted the most. And the fact that what should have been such an easy, sure thing was not an easy, sure thing for some of these people because they had the people that they were going to have to go against in the Fun Alliance were the Fun Alliance, you know, the people that you want to have out there on the beach because they're not only like, you know, kind of like puckish, mischievous characters, they're also just great. There's so much fun to be around. You can only imagine what it's like to be around some of these people. So I think it's a testament to the Fun Alliance for being able to pull them over. I think it's a testament to the lack of skill in Steve's crew. And for Abby, I don't know how much I love the move ultimately, but if she wasn't feeling comfortable with those people, and if she's going to feel much more comfortable with the group that she goes over to, I do think once again this is a testament to the long game of Australian Survivor that if you're going to make this kind of shakeup and you want to get in solidly with a group that you feel like you're going to be able to ride with for a while, maybe now is the time to do it. Rather than like have to really entrench yourself with people that you're just not going to be able to stand, or you know that you're not going to be able to work with well, or you know by experience at this point that you're not going to have a lot of agency. So even if she doesn't have a ton of agency with the Fun Alliance, maybe she at least has the illusion of agency, which can be just as important for a player and their individuality. So I don't hate it. I think that she was in a tough spot, especially. And then Ross is just a crazy person who's just going to, you know, to assign logic to Ross feels like a mistake at this point. And I wouldn't dare make that mistake with such a lovable, lovable guy.
Yeah, well, you say logic, but I actually think like it's an emotional decision. And I really am not mad at that, because the thing is, like, you're going to have to play this game for the next 6 weeks. Like, who do you want to play with? You know, as you said, like, if she doesn't feel like she has a voice there, if she doesn't feel like it's a good thing for her, you're going to have to switch. And like Ross, had clashes with Nova, is he going to play this game with her, for the next 42 days? That might be difficult. Like, they just felt better with the other people. In a perfect world, they
She's reading the beach a little bit. You know, she's reading the room. I think you just raised a really good point that if she's already seeing that, like, the wheels aren't quite coming off of the alliance yet, but they're loose and they're looser than maybe other people realize. And she sees that Ross is not clicking with a central member of that alliance. And if she sees that Ross is very much clicking with Luke, and if Abby is feeling really good about, say, David or whoever, then to get off of the thing before it crashes and burns is not, it's emotional in the sense of like, hey, I want to live. I don't want to die here. So I think you raised a point that I hadn't even considered there.
But also, they went to the first tribal council on day two. So this was an alliance we saw made like within the first hour. Of course, they're going to cling to that to not be the first boot and have this like solid majority. But then they got a few more days, under their belt and realized that that just wasn't the personality for them. And I think that they have to be able to kind of move away from that if they think it's not going to be good for them for the rest of their game. Like, it's unfortunate. Obviously, in a perfect world, they start out with the fun alliance. They go to maybe tribal council on day nine. They kind of work out who they want to work with by that point. But they didn't get that opportunity. And I think at that point, they kind of have to move away from the 47. I think very beneficial to them that they've been able to go to a couple more tribals and get rid of Nova and Steve, who, well, let's talk about it, but were like, yelling or fighting. Or, when I interviewed Steve, he did not want me to use the word fight. He said, have a conversation with her. They were having aggressive conversation with her. So I think good for her that those people are gone. Good for Ross that Nova is gone. And Simon and ET seem way more passive. So I think they're in a really good spot now. But I do want to talk about the conversation. I have to cross fight out of my notes here because apparently it's not the fight. It's not the confrontation. It's not.
All right. Well, he didn't tell me I can't call it a fight. Okay. So it's a fight. It's a fight, Steven. I don't think anyone cares. It's semantics. You're going to live either way. You're going to be fine, guys.
Yeah, because this was a lot, and I love seeing the pure emotion on Survivor. So a lot of the fight, a lot of the conversation came down to, did Steve personally attack her, or was he talking about like her gameplay and her actions? So what did you see from this conversation that you could take from it?
I don't know. I thought that it was more about, I think that it's one of those things that's a little muddy. I mean, we've seen very ugly confrontations in Survivor history. We've seen really personal, like character assassinating types of face-offs. This was not that. This was not that. This does not. If you're going to draw up the list of the really ugly confrontations, this was not that. This is not going to make that list for me. If he's calling her weak, if he is saying that she, that she was weak-willed, I think that that did for him. It stemmed from being very hurt by the fact that she had left the alliance and voted the way that she had in the Susie vote. So in that regard, it was very, very personal. Was it over the line? I don't know. I mean, I think it was obviously bad gameplay.
Yeah, don't fight with the majority when you're in the minority is a good rule.
Typically, unless you got a plan, do you have an idol and are you trying to draw the votes to you or to a specific spot? That's a different scenario for me. But for me, it was like it was a combination of, frankly, what it was he's weak. He's weak in that moment. He's the person who's so hurt by her quote unquote betrayal, if you want to call it that. And I'm reluctant to because it was day seven. if you want to call it.
Their alliance had a name, like it was official.
Yeah. But I think it was more a testament to his own weaknesses as a player, potentially his own weaknesses as an individual in the context of Survivor. That, you think that things are just going to go a very specific certain way. And that's not how it rolls every time you're out there on the beach in this game. So I didn't think that it was necessarily like massively ugly. But I thought that it was a really bad look for Steven. And I think with the sort of like the charged tone of the conversation, I don't begrudge Abby for feeling hurt by it by any stretch. And that didn't seem like crocodile tears to me based on how it was presented. on the show, she seemed like she was very genuinely hurt by it. And I think when you engage in a really tense conversation like that with anybody,
yes.
especially in like the heightened circumstances of Survivor, I think it's, you know, I always have a lot of empathy for people who cry on the show because that's you're already so deprived. You're away from your family. You're living in an uncomfortable situation, both physically and emotionally and mentally. So it's hard for me to, you know, wag my finger at Abby and be like, oh, it's day 7. You can't be crying yet.
No,
I think it's or I guess it was day 10 at that point. I think it was totally fine. And then it was Nova who gets burned as a result of all of this anyway. So,
yeah, well, Nova was almost worse because she like fully stuck up for him. Then he even apologized and Nova like really just still didn't. And Nova has, you know, beef with other people. I mean, yeah, beef was a pun because she's, you know, Nova's kitchen. But Ross right. as well, they like, they called her the soup Nazi, I think, at a point. Like she was having bad social relationships too. But in terms of Abby and Steve, like, I think he actually was talking about her gameplay and her actions, but like, I could really see how that could be hurtful to her. You know, he says weak just repeatedly. I mean, and then she says, what's weak? And he doesn't say you. He says that, like her gameplay. But, you know, no one wants to sit there while someone's just saying weak repeatedly in their face. You know, so while I think it might have been about her actions, and he maybe saw it as that, like, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about what you did. Right. What she did, I guess, speaks to who she is. And, you know, she took that in a personal way, and I don't begrudge her that either.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm used to it. Like, if it were me, it's like, oh, I get called weak all the time. Like, this isn't so hard. And I know this about myself. So, like, this isn't, like, really, like, breaking news are happening now. But I think this is the kind of language, like you said before, like, that's the behavior of a contender. Like, you're acting like a contender right
such
now.
David.
We're champions. You're such a David. yeah, Steven acting like a real David right now. I feel like in the context of the champions and the worlds from which they come, and Abby being, you know, an athlete who's had a lot of success in that world, I think the word weak is going to hit her in the soft spots in a way that it wouldn't necessarily
be.
Well, you know, exactly. Like, that's another one of those words that's going to hit you there. Like, I feel like that is something that's not going to ride well. And I think that you're going to get hung up on it. And I think that that's one of the things that's fascinating about the psychology of some of these people. And I think it's really fascinating to me that the people that we're seeing really rise above in on the champion tribe, the people who are really playing well or at least are playing well within that champion tribe environment, are the people who maybe don't live like that, you know, who are competitive people for sure, but come into this from like a different type of competition, you know, a different type of competitive spirit, aren't, you know, the sporty types that I think, that's something that's gonna, and this is all speculative, by the way, because obviously I am not a sporty type, but of the people that I know, and I have many friends who are very athletic, and, you know, have, you know, I have been very, very, this should come as no surprise, within most of my friend circles outside of the podcast and in real life, I am the bottom ranked athlete in all of those groups.
You aren't even the bottom ranked athlete on this podcast right now.
I don't know if that's true, Shannon. Okay. You haven't seen me on any field, though I have not seen you either.
It's
so
not pretty.
I don't want to assume. But just from what I have observed from people like this who can be fabulous, very funny, really dynamic people. I do think that this kind of word, like calling someone weak, like Abby, I think that might stick in her craw the way it might not for somebody else. But I think even in the context of just Survivor generally, when you're already so weak or trending towards weak physically, your malnutrition, you know, the malnutrition starts to set in, the beach living exhaustion is starting to set in, that could just be a very triggering word, especially after you've made a pretty bold move by shaking things up.
Yeah. And, you know, Steve was just such an interesting one to me because he's someone who came out and he was playing the strategic game. I mean, I know he talked about outwit. He didn't want to play the outwit game. Look, he was doing it. I mean, he got 6 chizzy points. He really made an alliance, and that might have been his only strategy, but it's something he did. He didn't want to be the leader. Like, he was strategizing, but he talks about how he doesn't realize there should be a social game. And that's so weird to me because there can be no strategy without social capital. Those are the pieces on the board. So I really think it's pretty crystal clear how this all came crashing down. As Abby said, he didn't connect with her. So, like, if she has David, who she's close with, and all these people who later really come to her defense, like, what good relationships? I mean, you say you don't know, are they going to flip back? How can Abby flip back from that? Like, that's her family. You know, they rolled up in defense of her. That's a really, really hard thing.
It was so funny.
Yeah.
It was so funny.
And when you're vulnerable and people come up in defense, like, I think that's a really hard thing to flip away from, opposed to we just happen to all be athletes, which is kind of meaningless compared to we have a really good relationship. I care about you. I will defend you. Are you crying? Like, let me fix that for you. I think she's with them now for the long haul. I also think it would be a really bad decision to flip back. You know, we'll talk about Ross in the next episode. That, I mean, I don't know if that was really a possibility, but flipping twice in 1 week. I know there are six episodes a week, but, like, you know, don't do that. But I think she's with them. Like, it's an emotional connection.
I think so, too. I think so, too. But I don't know. I know she's your winner pick. Are you feeling better or worse about that after this week? Because she makes a what I think is probably the right move for her in going over to this group, and certainly the right move for me in going over to this group to give them much more of a fighting chance. But, like, after this display of emotion and after the fun alliance is, like, rolling up on Steve on her behalf, is there now, like, a perception that she really owes them a lot? Is she not really going to possess the level of agency that she had sought out? What do you think? What does the future look like for Abby Holmes?
You know, I feel good about it. I mean, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't say she would be the number one person on the board who's going to win, but she got some enemies out of the game this week. She has an alliance of people who she seems to connect with. I feel really good about that alliance in general. At, like, taking it really far. They've got a lot of idols. They have a lot of skills. I like where she's sitting in the game. And you know, we'll talk about, you know, let's talk about the next vote, because that was maybe, you know, the most boring of the votes. It was a unanimous vote for Steve, although there was some intrigue there. But look, they are ruling that champions tribe after talking about splitting the votes, or should they? It ends up being unanimous. Even, you know, Simon and E.T. do have to vote with them in the end. So I think that there's a lot of cohesion there for a while. And I want to see how that goes at, like, a swap or a merge.
Yeah. I thought it was a very, very responsible, restrained level of whispering at tribal council. Very mature.
That's how us Aussies do it. We don't have to be yelling from the rooftop. Yeah. We're an understated culture.
A very, very an adult display of whispering, and I appreciated that. The Steve vote was pretty straightforward. He was just in trouble. I didn't really buy it. Like, that was one of the moments, actually, where I think that the runtime of an episode of Australian Survivor starts to show at the seams a little bit, where Steven's just going to get voted out this week. You know, you could manufacture the drama that you need to, but this might actually have been better if we could have just portrayed this a little tighter. Like, I think if you shave 10 minutes off of this episode, it's a better episode.
Yeah, I mean, for me, where it kind of shows its time, it's like the challenges are so long, and the immunity
very
challenges
long.
Are often spoiled in the next time on, and that's really irritating to me, because I don't care that much about the challenges as it is. I really don't care when I'm spoiled, and it's very long, so that's the one thing I'm requesting of them to put an end to.
Yeah, I actually typically don't watch the next times on.
Yeah, I wish I could start doing that, but I'm a weak person, as we've discussed.
yeah. I did watch it at the end of the last episode of the season so far. So after the Steven vote, and I wish that I hadn't, because I feel like I know things more than I wish that I knew. And I don't know how deep into that we get on a podcast. So I will just shut up now. But I feel like the previews just generally across Survivor can be a little dangerous. And I found this to be very dangerous. It's like, oh, you just told me something that I didn't need to know yet. So we'll see how that all plays out, I guess.
Look, it's to capture the casuals, though. So that's what they're trying to do. But the contenders are on the season. So... Yes.
I don't know any of them, so this is going to be an awkward conversation. I mean, I know Andy. I'll echo Fishback. It took me a minute too. I had to hear from somebody who was like, you know, Andy was at the Know-It-Alls. I was like, oh my god, he was.
Oh my god,
I've definitely met him before. Drunkenly, I have to say, well and fully socially lubricated when I met Andy. So forgive me that I don't recall all the details, other than remembering meeting him very specifically. No visor that I can recall. Such an odd look bringing the visor. Should I do a wombat's visor for season 39?
Oh my god, yes.
might be an interesting
idea. Can we give that to the Chile winner? Because then Andy's going to, like, retroactively play so much harder to try and get the visor, the Wombat's visor.
And the Wombat is from your neck of the woods, so I'm thrilled to design a Wiggler's Wombat's visor for the Chizzy winner, if you would like.
Oh my god, I'm so pumped up about that. That is just the best thing ever.
I'm happy to grant that to you. So obviously, I've met Andy. I can attest to the fact that, you know, firsthand, that somebody who has come to numerous know-it-alls, making the schlep that you yourself have done, and you know how much goes in to getting from Australia to New York, for him to have done that multiple times for a Survivor event because he loves Survivor so much.
He's an ultra fan.
I do not deny that label. I think the ultra fan label, I think he wears it well, much better than he wears the visor. Take it
lowest bar.
It looks bad. But he's also just like crushing these challenges too.
I know.
So good on Andy. Andy, you know, maybe too good on Andy, honestly. Like, you know, if he's got the Survivor savvy and he's also in the savvy and he's also playing these challenges as well as he is and outing himself in that way, that may be something that like you want to hold on to. You may want to back pocket some of those skills. But hard to fault him. Contenders haven't really seen much danger since that first tribal council they went to. Other than that, they're cruising.
Yeah, I mean, if people are going to look at Andy like he's the threat we have to take out, just aesthetically, I think he has some room to kind of do well in the challenges without, you know, if Sean Hampson was doing it, maybe you'd say they're going to take you out eventually. But I think he has some room. You know, everything we know about the contenders structure is from this one confessional from Andy. It says, okay, so the pecking order, apparently, he told us. So Sean and Daisy, which is a connection that we ended up seeing later, they're really tight. They're at the top. So, not a good thing to piss off Sean from the other side, but whatever. Then there's John and Maddie up at the top. Then the bottom is Baden, Hannah, who has not yet been on screen, and Sarah. And then the middle is Sammy, Casey, Harry, and Andy. So that's the structure as we know it. I mean, three of these women have still not received a confessional after 5 episodes. You know, we were sent a clip where Jonathan kind of calls out each person in the challenge by name, and the camera gets it wrong and switches up 2 of the girls as he's calling their name. So not even the show seems to know who they are, which is unfortunate from an airtime perspective. One person I want to talk about, you know, obviously beyond the idol stuff we've talked about, is Sean Hampson finally got some screen time this week. Yes, he, you know, he's an AFL player. They did an AFL challenge and they still didn't make him kick, which for our international listeners, that's really funny because Sean Hampson was in a position where, you know, in the game where they're not good kickers. So the fact that they never had him kicking the ball was just hilarious to me, considering he's a literal AFL player who only retired like a year ago. So
why is he a contender then? Why isn't he a champion?
He explained because he didn't win an AFL premiership, which is like, look, if you can play the game but not win basically like the Super Bowl of AFL, it makes you a contender. Like, how much of a contender am I? If that's what makes you a contender, I'm like many, 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 many rungs below what a contender should be.
Yeah, so contenders are starting to look like champions this season.
Exactly. So, yeah, definitely the Sean Hampson stuff I continue to enjoy. He's obviously in a really good spot. The challenges in general, I mean, I loved the AFL challenge. I'm a really big footy fan. It seemed a little bit unfair. Like, it really did seem unfair to put 3 football players, to be fair, 3 against 1, because Sean Hampson is a football player, but he's a Ruckman. But they put 3 football players, like, obviously they were going to win.
Right, yeah, I think that was a no-brainer. What was the reward on that?
That was, so then they went to the fish and chip shop, and they got all the champion cards, and I was like, wow, they really expected them to be here, didn't they?
Yeah, maybe that was it. It's like, well, we invested so much in the production design of these little champion newspapers.
Not that much. They didn't invest that much, because if you looked at Toki's Our Survivors, 2 incorrect apostrophes. I'm sorry, I'm an editor, but no.
Yeah, that would have bothered me if I'd looked too closely. I mean, look at us drifting back to talking about the champions game, but we didn't really talk about this part. I loved this scene. I loved seeing Luke's family. I thought that was lovely. I love that extra, you know, layer of dimension to Luke, who is, you know, the great, you know, he is the Loki of Australian Survivor. He is the trickster god, and if you combine Luke and Toki, Loki comes up pretty easily. So I love that aspect of him, but to get that deeper understanding of where he comes from. And we knew, you know, a good amount of this already from his first appearance, but to just be reminded about that and to see him have that emotional moment was really, really lovely. And then the other thing I'll say is I think the fish and chips looked delicious. You know, I'm always on like food watch with these Survivor Awards, and it didn't look like it had been sitting out too long. It looked freshly fried. The French fries themselves looked very crispy and nice. They could have been a little more well done to my liking, but I would have been very happy with that reward. I think that that was a very good reward that they won.
Yeah, I mean,
certainly better than the tweezers and the box of shit that the contenders won.
The contenders have had the worst rewards, so they won two rewards. They got the terrible, terrible beauty products. Such a bad reward.
That's so terrible.
Marshmallows and hot chocolate. The champions have won like all the supplies, then the tarp and fishing gear, and then fish and chips. Like, you literally can't compare.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah, just the box of crap. And Jonathan, who I love, was just like, oh, you're really going to want this box. Trust me. Like, this is definitely worth it.
The box. It was such a bad box.
Yeah, what's in the box? I mean, God, it was rough. That was horrible. I would be so mad. I'd be so mad if I got. And then the fact that like you have to assign somebody to assign everything out and there's no sharing at all. What a bummer. Just a terrible, terrible deal.
Awful. I mean, look, okay, so it's like someone got a blanket, someone got a toothbrush, like that might be worth it, but like the tweezers for Sean Hampson, the moisturizer, really not worth it. Especially because the challenges are so hard. Like, let's talk about the jumping challenge, which was obviously a massive plot point in, you know, episode 4. So, you know, obviously Sarah, huge PTSD, like horrible story, like really emotionally affecting. You know, everyone was there for her, which was amazing. But also, what would this have been if it was A, immunity, and B, a worthwhile reward that wasn't, you know, marshmallows and hot chocolate? Of course, they're not that mad at her. That's a horrible reward. Like, that was not worth the challenge.
Well, maybe that's what she figured, too. She's like, you know, maybe I would like be able to like get my Roger Bingham on if this was a if immunity was on the line, or if like a full blown like, you know, like pizza feast was on the line.
Yeah, but not worth it.
This is not worth me facing my greatest fear. I'll bottle that up and save it for later in the season.
Oh, my God. Like, really?
It was a good emotional moment, though. She's a wild story. And she pinged on my radar as potentially, especially because of like the way that she bounced back from it socially without really having to do anything. Like, everybody kind of just like right back at camp was like, don't worry about that. You're still the best. We love you so much. It was like, oh, these people love her.
Would they have said that if it was if it was immunity? Good chance she goes, I think, especially because they said she's on the bottom anyway.
Nah, they would be like, screw you, Baden, for some other reason.
Baden got his champion moment. Like, I don't know. I mean, look, not a good look to vote out the woman who can't jump because of PTSD from like the worst thing ever. But if she costs them immunity or even a good reward, but they can all be sweet and loving when it's marshmallows and hot chocolate.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's right.
And I think also, we have to talk about this. A lot of it comes down to Casey, who's someone you may not know because she hasn't been on the show. But the one thing
I have no idea who most of these people are, so you'll have to help me.
Casey lives in a van. That's one thing you should know about her. The second thing is she just immediately in this challenge was like, I can't do it, and made, you know, Sarah do it. And there's some extra stuff there. I think she said online that like they had discussed it previously. And also you could think, you know, maybe they don't want Sarah for the immunity challenge, which is much, much more important than this terrible reward. But look, I think she knows, not a great look to make someone with PTSD jump into water from a great height. So not a good look.
At least not for marshmallows.
Yeah, I think that she'll be begging for that lack of airtime. The only thing that we saw of her in this week was making her do that terrible thing. Like, just go back to being invisible.
Yeah. I guess I should talk about my takes on gold miner John.
Yeah, a good week for John, I thought. You know, of all the contenders we didn't see that many of, John seems like universally beloved, you know, and the way that he gave out those rewards with like a lot of fun and stuff, you know, that could be a hard position, and he pulled it off so well.
Yeah, and he pulls off the hair and the mustache so well as well. Like, he's got an incredible look about him. He seems like he's sort of like, he's got like a little bit of like the jestery type of deal going on about him as well, that he seems like he's a little bit goofy. Like, he had that moment where he was locked up with, I think it was, is he locked? Was he locked up with David?
David, yeah, the kissing.
And he like he plants the big kiss on his face, and he does well, like going, he gets drawn over to the Champions Tribe for the marshmallow reward, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he comes back and, like, you know, there's, you know, that can often be like an alienating thing for a player. Didn't seem like it was alienating for him at all. Seems like most of these people really like him. He strikes me as the kind of person who's going to get voted out and never see it coming eventually. Yeah. So like I'm waiting for that moment from him. I don't have high expectations of him as a player, but I've enjoyed him as a television character. I would advise him to keep his pants on.
Not in Australia. That's not how we roll, apparently, in Australian Survivor. You didn't watch last season, but there were a lot of butts.
Yeah, but I look, I'm not mad at butts. But, and maybe he should be more strategic about the taking off of the pants. Maybe work on the tan. You know, to get like the gold miner needs a little bit more of a gold sheen everywhere. But the pale posterior was a lot.
I'm never going to tan shame. I'm very pale. And Jonathan was so proud of gold miner versus gold medalist. It was like he was just loving that. And then the line about Steve skating through, Jonathan was like, what a week for me.
That was hysterical, though. But that, like, how he even, like, paused to, like, soak in the moment when he dropped that. And everyone was like, oh, Jonathan. He's like, I know. Eat it, Probst. Jonathan's the best. As I have said before, I've loved him since New York Undercover. So great to have Jonathan LaPaglia back in my life.
And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right. So we've gone through these three episodes quite in depth. The contenders were kind of there. We mostly spoke about the champions, which I think is true to screen time. But we need to talk about the Chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 1, 1, 1, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 1, 3, 1, 2, 1.
All right. Well, I will start. And even though the Chizzy is cursed, as we've discussed, and I don't love that the Chizzy leaders went home, this is a trend that need not continue because I'm very, very, very happy to give 3 votes to Luke Toki.
Ooh, yeah.
What a perfect week. I just, you know, to get an idol, to be, you know, the strategic leader of what is now the majority. The flip was masterful to watch. I think he had a huge hand in that. And then he's the strategic leader, but David is becoming an increasingly arrogant shield. And Stephen kind of mentioned it last week, like, could David be the shield that Jericho never was? And it's becoming more and more apparent that that's true. So I love his position in the game. You know, you spoke about his story at the reward. Is Luke Toki the best character in Survivor history?
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I honestly think about this. Look, I love Suri. Tony Vlachos would be there. And Luke. Those are my three. Like, those are the three best characters in Survivor history. Luke is such, this isn't what the Chizzy points are for. Like, he played a phenomenal game. I've always said it. Underrated player. Still getting people telling me he's not a good player. And, like, I don't know how that's possible. He was amazing this week. This was probably one of his best weeks on Survivor as a player. But as a character.
I think he's an underrated player. I think he's a very underrated player. I think he's a perfectly rated character because he is like next level. He's just like his mannerisms, the way that he structures his confessionals, the creative shit that comes out of his mouth, you know, and just like sort of like the chest thumping quality that he has that he reserves mostly just for us, while he seems to be like so affable in person, makes him not just a great character, but that shows a level of awareness of when he's supposed to be turning it on, to what volume he's supposed to be turning it around, turning it on around other people, that I think Luke is very underestimated. I think that, you know, he has the potential just because of how much of a wild swinger he is, that I think that he has the potential to like get caught unaware. You know, we had those where he kept passing like the very obvious tree multiple times. So like that's a little bit of a metaphor of Luke as a Survivor player for me. Like eventually he's going to get it. Often things will work out for him, but often things will work out for him not entirely by his design. And sometimes he'll be left out on like the blatant information. So I would be shocked, amazed, and thrilled if Luke were to win this season. I given his current situation, I really like his ability to go far. So I like that you're putting 3 points on him here, because I feel like Luke is going to be around for a while, which is not something that I would have said, you know, at the start of this season. I would have, as I said earlier, really feared that Luke was going to be in immediate danger given his history as a past Survivor player and everybody knowing what his game looks like. But so far through 5 episodes, it's hard for me to imagine Luke being in imminent danger. And I'm knocking on copious amounts of wood as I say that, because I do not want to damn him.
Yeah, we've definitely jinxed him. Yeah, I mean, look, as a player, I think I really love people who are so much more intelligent than they seem on a surface level. And Luke's an intelligent guy, you know, the way he plays the game. And I think the way he's just showed some really great strategic skills this week. I think that he showed how comfortable he is out there in the strategic game. I can see what you're saying. I mean, look, it wasn't great when he was walking back and forth past the bush, but in a lot of ways, you know, he chose the right people to flip and he targeted them and he pulled it off. Like, I really, really love that. And we saw, you know, he looked in the raft for the clue. Like, there is some awareness there, but I do get what you're saying. I think, yeah, as we said, underrated player, but just as a character, like with the story that he has, I really hope Sia is watching her homegrown Survivor, because this is a man who's perfect for the Sia Fan Favorite Award. I'm not sure he can win Australian Survivor. It's a very long game. He's a huge threat to sit at the end. His story really, really tugs at the heartstrings. But just to have him on my TV, every confessional to me is fun. He has way more screen time than everyone else, but like, he's the one person I'm not mad at it with. And that voting confessional for Susie was hilarious. And then he also has the story. Like, this man has so much depth and so many layers to his characters. I honestly think, yeah, gold standard Survivor casting. I tweet about it a lot. I've said it on every podcast, and I'm just so glad to have Lutoki on my TV and to give him 3 points.
Yeah, and then, he's a unicorn. That's what I'll say about him is, well, Tony himself is a unicorn. So they're both unicorns, but they are their own unique creature. Like, there, you can see aspects of Tony in Luke. Not all of them. And there are qualities about Luke that you do not find in Tony, but they are just sort of these singular forces of nature, of Survivor nature, that make their seasons automatically better for however much time they are involved. So I'm glad at the very least that for Luke, it's working out better on round two than it worked out for Tony on round two.
Yeah, I'm not sure Tony could have this good a first 5 episodes on a return season as Luke is having. I mean, it's a different situation. It's with all newbies, but he's not going out there super high.
I would love for you to be wrong at some point in the future. Yeah. That would be fun. But I'm inclined to agree with you. All right, who else do you have?
Yeah, all right. 2 points I'm going to have to give to David. And he did a lot wrong. And on Survivor South Africa, we do something called the Doof of the Week, which is the worst player of the week. It doesn't really work for Australian Survivor, because I feel like David would kind of be that for me, in that the idol thing was so bad. And I didn't understand why he was doing that. But then also, he also gets 2 points because the rest of the stuff he did was so good. Like, I feel like he was a huge part of, you know, obviously pulling Abby over. He's a swing vote. Without that flip, all those people are dead in the water. Like, without that flip, we're looking at the Sporty 7 running things right now. It's like literally the mirror image situation. So I'm going to give 2 to David, even though I thought, you know, he really wanted to demote himself on points, I think. But I kept him there. I'm going to give a point to Pia. Just, I loved her awareness in episode 5. She really knew what the plan was. She knew her name was on the chopping block. I think she's shown great awareness thus far. I think she was, you know, obviously part of what was happening in episode 3. So I'm going to give a point to Pia. Janine was obviously awesome in episode 3. We've talked at length about that, but I demoted her to an honorable mention because, yeah, I thought her idol stuff was really bad. And then I thought the good stuff she was doing wasn't necessarily as good as what David did. So David stayed on his points and Janine got bumped. And then hard to give to any contenders because we didn't see them. But if I was going to give an honorable mention to anyone, it would be John, just for the very strong social work he's putting in. But otherwise, you got to be on my TV to earn the cheesy points. So you best start throwing challenges. You know, if Andy was a real Ultra fan, he'd be throwing challenges to, you know, win cheesy points.
Okay. And so now it's my turn to award some cheesy points.
Yes.
And I want to get a resetting of how this is going to work, and you tell me if I'm on the money here. So whoever ends the season with the most chizzy points,
yes,
wins the chizzy, and you are only eligible for points for as long as you are active in the game. So once you're voted out, you can earn no further chizzy points.
People have tried to break the rules with, you know, the jury, but yes, that is what the rules should be.
Okay. And I can assign my chizzy points however I would like to assign them.
Well, I would like if you gave it some weight and some merit and didn't just give to people. But, you know, yes, technically, yes. I mean, Bryce gave one recently for someone who was good looking. So, yeah.
Well, I may go a little bit more in the Bryce mold because we have decided that whoever wins the chizzy gets a wombat visor.
Yes.
And considering it is the prize is inspired by the existence of the visor that is currently worn horribly, I might add, by Andy Meldrum, and that he is the inspiration behind this thing, who am I to not award him 3 chizzy points?
Josh, you're ruining the whole system.
For very wiggler reasons. I have to. I'm sorry, Shannon. I'm going to break the chizzy this week. I have to give him 3 points while I am here on the podcast and may not have another chance to boost him a little bit further down the path. It is not entirely without merit. He has shown that he is exceptional in these challenges in a way that I don't think people would have given him automatic credit for just on optics, especially who he is surrounded by. We have seen him talk very intelligently about the social dynamics on the contenders. And I know that you're allowed to read into the edit here on this podcast. And if you're doing some edit reading, I think that we are being set up to look at Andy as part of the Fulcrum faction here within the contenders. If the contenders go back to tribal as they currently exist, the outcome of that tribal council, I think, is going to be very much dictated by Andy's actions. I don't know about Andy's shot to win the whole game. I think that he is going to have to connect eventually with other like-minded players, and how he makes that flip when the contenders themselves behave a lot more like you would expect from a champion type of tribe. I think it feels like loyalty is king on the contenders, and that sort of camaraderie spirit is very much alive on the contenders. And I think that Andy wants to play eventually more of an American type of survivor game. I think how he makes that switch eventually, if he makes that switch, it's got to be very elegant and deft and careful. And we have not yet been proven one way or the other if he is capable of such a feat. But I think that Andy is playing a strong game on a winning tribe right now, and so it is not completely ridiculous to assign him 3 chizzy points, though I am also very happy to admit that I am making most of that up just to give the man who has the visor 3 points towards a wombat visor.
Well, you cursed him, so you played yourself.
That's he's going home next. It's probably true, but I got to at least put him on the board. Listen, he's an Ultra fan. If you're going to fly to America from multiple Survivor know-it-alls, I got to show you some respect. A tip of the visor cap to Andy. From there, I will put 2 points on Janine because I was so impressed by her first Tribal Council performance of the week. The way that she saved herself when her neck was on the line. A lot of people in that crew that you could give credit to. But I'm gonna give the 2 points to Janine for being in the hot seat and being so calm, so poised, so collective. In that moment, she had the 3 C's, Shannon. So she has 2 points towards the chizzy from me. And then I guess I'll just probably throw one on Luke as well. You know, he did find the idol. He had so much great emotional content this week. We've already talked about all the reasons why he's fantastic. Luke is to Australian Survivor for me as Sangmin is to the genius.
Wow. I love that. Just, and it's true.
You know, he's just spectacular. So I will toss a point his way. But Pia very much in consideration here as well. I think that she's playing a really, really great game. And I love David. But, we just got to see how things are going to bear out for him a little bit more moving forward.
I'd love to see Luke and Sangmin in a room together.
Jeff, too. And Tony. Get Tony in there as well.
All my favorite people.
You got to figure out who the 4th person is. And then we've got a Mount Rushmore.
It's you, Josh.
I mean, I have some ideas from the Survivor South Africa season that I saw.
Oh, I guess that's true. Now I was thinking about, like, the, you know, champions of the genius, US, Australia, and RHAP. You can go on the Mount Rushmore and have that extremely fun dinner party with Tony, Sangmin, and Luke.
Yeah, we can sell tickets to that.
All right. Well, we do have a couple of questions from the listeners. Alice Borelli asks, did you agree with the champion's choice to take John for the reward? Who would you have chosen Is there an optimal strategy here? I know we've spoken a bit about that. Last season, which you didn't watch, there was a girl in the Contenders tribe who was stolen named Paige. And she was a really, really obvious one to steal because she was very much on the bottom and she was like literally strategizing with the champions and telling them she was going to flip to them. So she was an easy one to steal. But I think it's really hard now for the champions because A, I don't think there's like an obvious, maybe Baden is someone who's like really on the bottom
to try and flip. I was going to say, but I mean, how much have the contenders projected that?
He thought Baden would go home, which was really unnecessary to say in front of everyone. And I guess they're seeing from that perspective.
Right. But I mean, like how much have the contenders themselves telegraphed that? Not that Steve's read was wrong, but how much have the contenders telegraphed that? Like if they can read into that situation well enough, like if there is something that we haven't seen, or at least that I have missed, where the contenders have really put out there that Baden is pretty clearly, or at least at a time was pretty clearly the perceived weakest link, then Baden would be somebody to consider bringing over. But I think that you're right that there just doesn't seem to be anyone that is like such an obvious choice.
Yeah.
So why not bring somebody who seems like a good time, seems like a bit of a party, seems like somebody who is well liked at contenders because he's probably a fairly like what you see is what you get type of guy. So let's see what you get with that kind of guy. Let's see what you can learn about their tribe dynamics from bringing that person over. So I'm not mad at the pick to bring John over. And I don't think that there was a much better obvious pick from the champion's perspective other than maybe Baden, if that's telegraphed a little bit more than I thought it was.
Yeah. Another thing about these champions compared to last year's champions is those champions were winning. So if you're going to try to take someone on the bottom to be your number, that's great. But these champions are now way down in the numbers. And even if they try and get Baden over, I think they're kind of drawing battle lines. Like, we'll be against you and we're trying to get like some of the bottom feeders from you, which might not pay off. I think they're really going to need these contenders if the trend does continue. And they're at the contenders' mercy. So John, who's someone who seems really well-liked, I mean, they took him, they had a good reason to take him, a good excuse, because he was so nice to Sarah. And they could have taken Sarah. But you know, whatever, it was a nice thing to do. It made logical sense to do it. And you get in with a guy who may hold your fate in, you know, his hands. If they have to get rid of a couple more people before a swapper emerge, he might be someone in power to help you rather than last year's champions who needed numbers to come to their side rather than kind of being, you know, needing to go to the other side.
Great points all around. I think that's right. You podcast about Survivor or something? It seems like you've studied the game.
Yeah, I've just watched 6 episodes in the last week. It's a lot.
Right. it's a lot.
Literally, my voice has... I think I've done well for this podcast, but my voice this
You're
morning was
great.
Gone.
You're doing great. Stay alive.
John Johnson asks, did JLP miss an opportunity to make Sarah face her fears like Probst did motivating Sarit across the beam? She didn't jump, which to me was like the blind side of the week.
Yeah, I thought that she probably would have. I thought that that's what we were building towards. I don't know. It's early for that kind of story. I'm glad that it didn't. You know what? Because it felt very real.
Yeah.
The fact that she didn't jump felt very real. The Hollywood version of that ending is she faces her fears and she jumps and she either wins marshmallows for everybody or at least she was willing to put everything on the line for those precious fluffy little treats. But it's so much more realistic that she is like,
I'm not facing this horrible fear for hot chocolate. Like, are you crazy? Like, no.
No, sorry. I like hot chocolate, but no. You know, like, I think that was just more realistic. So I appreciated the way that it played out. And it added some drama and it was good. And, I do find, even though they're longer, I find that the challenges on Australian Survivor tend to be really compelling compared to some of the challenges that we see in American Survivor sometimes. I thought that this added that extra level of intrigue that sometimes you don't always get. And I like that it didn't have just like kind of like a nice tidy bow on the end of it. So I was happy.
I like how Australian Survivor just shamelessly uses all their sets again. Like that AFL set, the jumping set from when Monica did it. They're like, look, we have these in the storeroom and we're going to bring them out. That's why they keep doing similar colors as well. Like they're literally just repainting these sets. It's very bold. And I did say last week, I think I realized I don't care about any types of challenges. I really like the AFL challenge. Like, as a footy fan, I'd be happy for all the challenges to be AFL challenge from now on. I love that.
I traditionally skip the challenges on Australian Survivor because I'm binging and trying to catch up so that I don't get spoiled as the season is going deeper. So I'll hop around through a challenge. Like I'll strategically like fast forward 2 minutes or 3 minutes or whatever.
You go to 1.5 it.
Right. But now that I'm watching live, like I feel like I could just kind of soak the whole thing in. So I'm really enjoying it right now. I'm really fingers are crossed that I'm going to be able to keep pace because I'm really enjoying the season challenges and all right now.
I'm glad we got you into it. Felipe Shimon wants to ask, what's the best thing Josh would like to see translate from Australia to US Survivor, both storytelling or gameplay wise? And does he feel Australia should adopt any production strategies from the US?
Broad question, not a single like one answer that I could give. I loved the creativity behind the idol swap this past week, this past episode, which is something I would love to see. I would love to see like what, you know, because American Survivor is so obsessed with the artifacts game, right? Like and like having like if it's not an idol, then it's an idol nullifier or it's whatever. Mm. And like having that be so baked into the game right now, you know, to a degree that I don't love necessarily. But if we're going to have such a proliferation of this stuff, I would like to see it done in the same way that we saw in Australian Survivor this week, where it is built on the back of the social game, that in order to pull off this move, you have to be willing to risk contact with the other tribe. You have to start making those cross tribal connections early. And then you have to be willing to, you know, this is the handoff, you know, had shades of what launched in Second Chance, of like going out there on the field at a challenge and being willing to find an idol in front of everybody. I like that. And I don't think that has fully paid off in the grandest ways that it can, on Survivor yet. Like no one's really been caught in an explosive way on that front yet. And I'm excited for that day to eventually arrive, hopefully. But I think that if we're going to keep getting into like the trinkets game, on American Survivor, I would like for it to be a little more socially dependent in a way that I don't think that it usually is. It's usually about like how crafty are you the individual. I like the idea of like how crafty are you the individuals, like how crafty are you as a person who is willing to put so much stock and trust in another person that you have to like identify and you have to find and you have to work with in order to get this thing that you want. So I loved that. And then more broadly, the longer runtime, I think, is something that I would like to see applied to American Survivor, especially as the game itself seems to be growing beyond the scope, as I have evangelized before in the most recent season of American Survivor. If the game is going to be growing beyond the scope of what can be reasonably portrayed in a 42-minute episode, then I think we got to be boosting it closer to 90 minutes. And that's something that Australian Survivor does every single week.
Three times a week, right?
No, that's what Australian Survivor could take from American Survivor. Once a week is plenty. Once a week is plenty. Three times a week is way too much. Yeah. Way too much.
So interesting what you say about idols, because it really just kind of crystallized for me. Yeah, idols are not social at all in the US anymore. Like, it's become so individual that you have an idol, you find an idol, and its function is become pretty predictable. It's like, just save you for that tribal until you can find your next idol. Like, we often find that is true, obviously not all the time, but we've seen a lot of that, and that's what I find really boring. I've definitely called for fewer idols in general, but I also think, yeah, more social idols. Let's get this going. And there's a lot of idols, for example, in South African Survivor, but I think the reason maybe that works for me is because there's a more social component and it ends up kind of being a more dynamic way to use and play and find idols. And if we can't get fewer idols, and I really don't think that the US is ever going to do that, no matter how much I tweet about it, so confusing that they're not reading my tweets, but I would love a more social way. And I love right. this. This works so well. There's now three idols in the game and they can keep it at that, but I love yeah. this.
Well, one of the things that I think, look, it's you know, you want Survivor to be as authentic as possible. And I just celebrated the fact that Australian Survivor had this moment that could have had a Hollywood ending. And instead it was a very realistic ending to how that would play out. Like, I'm not throwing myself off of this platform for frickin' marshmallows. Are you crazy? Are you absolutely mad? So I appreciated that it ended realistically. But at the same time, what you want to be doing is you want to be and this it's going to sound harsher than I mean it, that like you want to be manufacturing drama, not in the sense that you want it to be fake, but you want to be creating the circumstances that lead to drama. And I think that we have, if not like fully exhausted this form of drama, we're at least running on fumes, and it's crazy that we haven't had to pull over to the gas station to refuel. But like the idea of like you need to go off on a secret mission all alone to find this thing, and it's just focused on one person specifically. A scene is so much more interesting if you've got two people in it. And I think that that's something that Australian Survivor did really well in this most recent episode. I'm, as I've said, casual fan of Australian Survivor and International Survivor writ large, that I can't be here weighing in on. This is something that happens a lot, but this was a great instance of manufacturing drama that is going to require multiple characters participating in this storyline, and something that is very high stakes, and something that if it's busted wide open and spills out to everybody else being able to be a participant in it in that moment is suddenly very, very exciting. And now we also have a secret that two people who have no real reason to trust each other have to try and trust each other on, except that it's also already been a deception because of the improbable play from David. So there's just so many potential outcomes from something like this. So that's something that I would love to see from American Survivor. And I know that from Jeff Probst's perspective, Matt Van Wagenen, the people who are, you know, responsible for crafting the seasons of American Survivor, that they are, you know, they're big fans of scripted TV. They're big, you know, they're huge into drama, and they love the storytelling of Survivor. And I think that David versus Goliath, which I will forever, you know, preach the gospel of as one of the greatest seasons in recent Survivor history and maybe of all time, had such innovative storytelling. And even the season that I don't care for that much, Edge of Extinction, had some moments like, you know, yeah. War Dog, like the way that like it was presented to us, how War Dog structured the Wentworth blind side. Like they've been creative in terms of like taking like a little hammer to the fourth wall, like they're Andy Dufresne trying to break out of Shawshank over the course of 15 years. I think that they can find ways to have more effective tools in their arsenal to give us some creative storytelling. And I think that that hinges on some evolutions in the game design, you know, the idols and not just like evolving like the trinkets themselves, but maybe being a little more creative in the delivery mechanism of these trinkets.
Yeah, I mean, I know they steal our challenges, so they can definitely steal this twist and the AFL challenge, which I'd love to see Americans try to do. But Josh, it was so awesome having you on this podcast. I just realized I said Luke Tokey is the best player ever and didn't say don't at me on a Josh Wigler podcast. I'm telling you, I'm getting sick, like I'm losing my
I would have said something, but I felt like the don't at me was implied, so I didn't correct
don't
it.
At me about this, seriously. Yes. I know. Yes. What I want Luke Tokey. Okay.
Yeah. So, yes,
For people who have gotten this far into the podcast, what is the hashtag? I have hashtag wombats visor. I love that you offered that to us, and I graciously accepted as a prize.
Yeah, and you can have it as a hashtag as well.
Can I have it as for the South African Jizzy winner? Because I don't have a prize for them yet either. Like, I'm just kidding. I like to, you know, get things out of my podcast guests more than just their time and skills.
Yeah, we could make the wombat visor a thing.
Can I have one?
Yeah, you can have one as well. Absolutely.
I'm Mike so excited. Cannot.
None for Bloom.
Well, that seems mean. But we'll work on it. Maybe Mike can also
Bloom
have one.
Bloom can have a visor. Bloom can have a visor.
I'm so excited. You're going to do like a whole shipment. This is the best thing ever. But
it's just become very pricey all of a sudden. But we'll figure it out.
I really like to shake down my podcast guests. I should have warned you about that.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so this is the last time that I will be appearing on the Shannon Game podcast, so I hope you enjoyed it.
All right, well, you can follow Josh Wigler at Round Howard. Josh, please tell the listeners where they can find the many, many things you are doing right now.
Sure. So Twitter is a good way to do that, even though I'm not tweeting a ton these days, taking it a little easy on the social media. I will be on post-show recaps. I am on post-show recaps, which is RHAP's scripted TV wing. We are posting a bunch of different podcasts every week. Mike Bloom and I, the aforementioned, we just finished podcasting about Stranger Things, and we've got some what we're calling Stranger Things adjacent coverage that is happening over the next couple of weeks on post show recaps, so that we're not a little bit lost on our way to the next podcast that we are going to be launching on post show recaps later in August. So if you like Mike Bloom and if you like me, he and I are doing a bunch together right now. My wife, Emily Fox, and I have just wrapped our Big Little Lies coverage on Post Show Recaps, and we are going to be launching our coverage of HBO's Succession in short order. That premieres on HBO August 11th, and we'll have weekly recaps, and we've got a preview show coming up in just a little while. And then on the RHAP front, this was fun to be talking about Survivor again for the first time in a very long time, but I am already in the minds of some Survivor 39 coverage that'll be coming your way weeks from now. But I'm working. I'm hard at work delivering you the stuff. So you will hear the stuff from me once I am able to present to you the stuff.
I can't wait for that. Although I do think more Survivor at this point may actually kill me.
Like, yeah,
I don't know if I can do it.
I really don't know how you do it, honestly. Like, I have found the deeper into like Survivor coverage I have gone, I really need to detox very badly. And with International Survivor being in existence, it's like there's no real slow period of the year where you can actually detox from Survivor. So I don't know how you do it, Shannon. My Wombat's hat is off to you. It is a really, really admirable and tremendous job that you are doing here.
No, it is only my joy and pleasure to get to come onto podcasts, talk to people like you, Josh. Like, genuinely, it is a lot, obviously, but it's so much fun. And yes, there's a lot of content, but it's all been really good content. Like, look at the week I just had, South African Survivor, Australian Survivor. I loved every second of it, and I love, you know, getting to talk about it. So thank you so much for coming on. You know, you guys can follow me for all of that Survivor content where I complain about my voice being gone, at Shannon Gates. Also, subscribe to the International Survivor Hapups feed in your podcast app. Also, watch South African Survivor, even though I've just bemoaned that there's too much Survivor out there. It's really fun. You can always DM me for the links. Last week, we had Annalise Sainsbury on the podcast with me and my co-host, Mike Bloom. This week, it's just me and Mike, but we will be live taste testing Biostrath on the podcast. That's what you can look forward to, Josh. That's the point we've gotten to in the podcast world. We've gone down a bit of a hole, and it's a lot of fun. So you guys should check it out.
How much South African Survivor am I going to have to catch up on by the time that I'm getting on the podcast, would you think?
A lot.
8 episodes, 9 episodes? Yeah.
Well, where are you up to?
The first tribal council? Don't spoil it for me. I'm like paused.
You're coming
right
on for like episode like 16 or something.
All right.
And it's 55-minute episodes.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, forgive me. I think I'm probably going to have to fast forward through the challenge.
It's really good. I think you're really going to enjoy it.
Let me know which challenges that have happened so far are can't miss, because I will make sure to watch those ones. Otherwise, I'm just going to skip.
Just 1.5. This is the way to do it. Like, I mean, I'm not doing that, but for you.
1.5 my podcast. I have a hard time 1.5-ing my television. I'd rather just skip the whole thing. I'd rather just get the final. Okay.
Well, you're coming on the podcast for I think you're on like the third last episode. If I'd known you were so behind, we could have put you on earlier. But now the schedule is set, so
I advocated for myself better. I feel bad about it, but I'll make it work. We're gonna be totally fine.
I really blame Mike for this. Like, I had nothing to do with the scheduling.
It's absolutely Mike's fault. It's 100% Mike.
All right. Well, I look forward to that. But in the meantime, you guys can check out what we're doing. Survivor South Africa, obviously. Australian Survivor next week. I think it's been confirmed. 3 episodes again. So much Survivor. So much fun. We'll be here talking about it. The guest is kind of TBD, you know, because the scheduling was weird. So I can assure you they'll be good. And now they're a surprise. So that'll be fun. But Josh, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It was so much fun. I just loved having you on the podcast. And you're not a casual. You just podcasted for, you know, almost 2 hours about Australian Survivor. You're an ultra fan, okay?
Well, I appreciate that. I'll take super fan. I'll take super fan, and I'll be very happy with that hat.
I'm an ultra fan.
Ultra fans can have the visor.
I can't wait for my visor. This is the best thing to come out of the podcast.
Yes.
Thank you for coming
pleasure.
On.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks to you guys for listening. We'll see you next week with the surprise mystery guest, which was totally by design. And I will throw it now to my exit interviews with Susie and Steven. Bye. Hi, Susie. Thank you so much for coming on to RHAP. I'm sorry that it's under these circumstances, but we really appreciate you coming on to the podcast.
That's fine.
So I just want to, you know, ask some questions about this crazy vote and the swing that we saw happen. So how comfortable did you feel in the Sporty 7 Alliance going into this tribal council?
Well, I felt pretty confident because, you know, I actually, you know, went up to E.T. and Stephen and, you know, they reassured me that we're keeping the same vote. This is what, you know, our alliance is, and it's going to get us some, you know, get us to, you know, as far as we can. And I think then when I knew a few cracks were showing with David and Abby there, you know, they had a strong bond. And then so when I went up to Abby, I kind of said, Abby, is everything good? And she said, yeah, you know, yep, everything's fine. And then so I thought I felt confident, but I still, you know, went around and looked for the idol for a couple of hours. and then I couldn't find that. So just, you know, hoped that the loyalty in the team would stay close.
Yeah, and beyond the larger alliance, did you have a tight one-on-one relationship with Abby and Ross, who were the two that flipped, or was it mostly just the alliance?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Abby was kind of friends with everybody, you know, and you know, of course, the Sporting Alliance. But with Ross, he was all over the place. You couldn't really, you didn't know what he was thinking. But, you know, at the start, we all kind of, you know, wanted to keep this alliance because it was strong. So, yeah, to see them in a couple of days, like Abby with, you know, hanging out with David and, you know, it was just, I could tell that it might have been easy for them to sway Abby over.
Yeah. And so who did you consider like your closest alliance out there on the island?
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, the Sporting Alliance, like, you know, E.T., Simon and Nova, we were really, and Stephen, of course, we were all, you know, felt that we had that loyalty with each other. And you know, with a sporting background too, you always kind of think you kind of loyal to your team, your loyalty coach. We all had that kind of in us. And I think the, you know, younger generation with Abby, kind of we lost her.
Right. And then I was surprised to see that Pia wasn't an option, and it was really between you and Janine, because Pia had been an option for the same kind of physical reasons last time. So why do you think that her name wasn't brought up as much as we saw?
Yeah, I think the reason Pia's name, you know, wasn't brought up as much is because Janine was gunning for me. So because she was trying to get, you know, me to go, but we kind of thought that, you know, she had to go next. But yeah, when you look at things differently, you think, you know, maybe we could have gone to Janine and said, what about Pia? You know, but it just wasn't like that. The Sporting Alliance was really strong.
Yeah, when you kind of look back in hindsight, is that the main thing you think you could have done, or are there other things you think you could have done to kind of make it go your way?
Yeah, I think, you know, if Abby and, you know, Ross didn't sway, it would have been perfect. It would have been, you know, fine. But because they broke the alliance, it was one of those things where you can't control. But looking back, you know, seeing a few of the cracks, you know, maybe, you know, getting somebody like Pia on the sporting side would have been good, because it's just about the numbers. Mm. But when I, you know, you think about that, you just don't know what. I mean, Abby said she wasn't going to vote for me, but then she did. So you just don't know who's lying.
Yeah. I was interested as well, you know, it's so interesting to see these like strength debates in a tribe of mostly athletes. And, you know, obviously you're a champion swimmer, so you'd be great for those like water and endurance challenges. Yeah. But really the conversation was around brute strength. And from what I'm seeing in the previews, we have a water challenge coming up next episode. So was there much of an argument to be had there about what an asset you were going to be in some of these challenges?
I know. Looking back, I wish at tribal I said something like that. Like, you know, we haven't even started the water challenges. I mean, because Janine was so good at talking and she has the gift of the gab, I kind of was like stuck, like I didn't know what to say. You know, I mean, business people are great at selling things, and, you know, I kind of wish that I said, you know, the water challenges haven't even arrived yet, you know. So hopefully they get one today.
Yeah. And then what about David? I mean, this was an interesting thing. I think a lot of the viewers were confused. He kind of intimated that you had a good personal connection, but then he was trying to rile you up and he told you he was voting for you. So just, can you explain this dynamic to us?
Yeah, I think, that's David. He tries to kind of project that, you know, he's such a nice guy and, you know, wants everybody to like him and use his charms. But I kind of, you know, I think I kind of saw through that. So when he came up to me and said, you know, I just want to let you know, thank you for being, you know, interested in my career, but I just want to tell you that I'm voting for you tonight. I kind of went, oh, David, like, you know, one, I know what you're thinking now. And two, you know, I know how the game's going to go. So, you know, it was kind of, I just thought it was weird. So I said that.
Yeah, I mean, would you rather someone kind of tells you if they're going to be upfront about it, or would you kind of rather they don't tell you something like that to your face?
I don't think it was necessary. I think it was just David being David and David trying to come across as, you know, I just want to let you know because, you know, I'm pretending to like you.
Right.
And I don't think, you know, it's a game. You're not there, you know, I don't think he's there to make friends.
Right, you saw it as quite false rather than like he genuinely was trying to be nice about it.
Yeah.
And then obviously you and Janine were kind of going for each other in this episode, you know, out of necessity. Had it been antagonistic at all between you before this, or was it basically just that you were the two options, you have to throw each other under the bus?
Yeah, I think with Janine, I wasn't that close with her because, you know, the Sporting Alliance was quite tight, and I think she knew that something was going on. But you know, we spoke together, but we didn't really have that. I think she was, you know, closer to, you know, David and Luke, not really you know, me. So I think it didn't really faze her who she was going to vote out. But once she knew that we were trying to vote her out, she really went for me. Nova and I were actually really close to Pia. So Pia turned as well and went to Janine's side.
Right. I mean, and so you were close with Pia kind of across those alliance lines?
Yes, yep.
Right. And there was just no chance of kind of bringing her into that alliance then just because she wasn't, you know, technically part of the 47?
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, Pia was, you know, going to come with us, like, you know, because she was close to Nova and I. And, you know, we were saying, you know, we're going to go for Janine. But then I think, you know, when Janine spoke to Pia, she managed to, you know, turn Pia's mind around and, you know, have the vote the other way. And when I said to Pia, I said, oh, Pia, you know, what are you talking, you know, what's going on? And then she said, oh, no, you know, Janine and I just swapped numbers. I'm like, oh, no.
Right.
She's getting a bit tight.
Yeah, I think maybe because this 47 was, like, so apparent, perhaps you just kind of would always have felt on the outs of that and saw the numbers kind of break a different way.
Exactly.
Yeah. And then just thinking about Luke, who we saw lead quite a bit of the strategy, you know, I don't think that he was going against you in a personal way, but did you have a poor personal relationship with him, or do you think it was just that physical argument once again?
Oh, with Luke?
Yeah.
Luke was fine. We didn't really have that much, you know, talk in the camp, but Luke, I think Luke is just, he's played the game before. He, you know, tries to put, like, you know, stir everyone up, like Nova and, you know, things like that. So, yeah, he's predictable in the way that he's trying to stir everything up.
Yeah. And then what about your, like, history with the show? Like, how did you get involved with Survivor in the first place?
Oh, well, yeah, actually, they asked me, you know, if I would audition, so I came in and auditioned. But, yeah, it was actually when I lost my twin brother, Sean, who passed away. His favourite show was Survivor, so, you know, a bit of emotion was in Survivor for me. I did it for him, and I, you know, wanted to prove to myself also that I can, you know, do some more challenges.
Yeah, I mean, that's really beautiful. I'm so sorry that happened to you, but to have that connection to him and to know that that was something he'd love. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wow, thank you.
Well, I'm really glad to have, you know, watched you on the show. I wish it could have been for longer, but, you know, thank you.
Me too. That's Survivor, isn't it?
Yeah, well, thank you for being on our screens for as long as you were, and thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Okay, bye.
Hi, Stephen. Thank you so much for coming onto Rob Has a Podcast. I'm sorry to see your game end. I thought you were bringing some really interesting stuff onto the show and were really entertaining.
Oh, thank you.
So you mentioned so early on that you wanted to, you know, get the seven together, the sporty seven. So how early did that really crystallize for you to get this majority alliance together?
Oh, that was the plan that I had in my head before I even left Australia.
Right.
And the when I recognized everyone that was in the sporting alliance and knew three or four of them already, I was like, well, yeah, this feels like the right fit to me, because usually athletes are pretty good at sticking to a plan and are disciplined. It didn't turn out that way.
Right. I mean, it was obviously made quickly, and you said you had some, even some pre-game relationships with some of them. But once it had kind of, you know, obviously not worked out, did you look back and kind of regret some of the people who were in the alliance, or even some that had not been included in the alliance?
Not really. I look back now, and I think there's a couple of people in the alliance whose skills and the challenges weren't what I thought they would be. But, you know, the plan was that if the seven people stick together, then even if you lose a few immunity challenges, the seven of you still make it to tribe swap, and everybody gets to at least a halfway point in the show, and then you reevaluate from there.
Right. So are you able to say who of the seven you kind of had known even before the show?
Yeah, when I saw who was in the tribe, I'd already met E.T., I'd met Simon Black, I'd met Susie Maroney, I'd met Nova Paris. I hadn't met Ross Clark-Jones or Abby Holmes, and it was interesting that they were the two that flipped.
Right. And obviously we saw that there was, like, confrontation with Abby later on. Was there a reason that there was confrontation with Abby and not as much with Ross, and we even see you trying to work with Ross later on, or did we maybe not even see some confrontation with Ross?
There was no confrontation with Ross, because Ross came to us before Tribal Council and told us that he promised Janine that he wasn't going to vote for her.
Right.
And Abby was there, E.T. was there, Simon was there, and we all said, well, that's not great, Ross, but... you know, we've still got the numbers, so we weren't all that worried about it. And we said, okay, you know, we've got some things to talk about, but we'll get through the vote tonight, and then we'll have a further chat tomorrow. And everybody agreed, and then we went off to Tribal Council, and Abby didn't support us, so that was disappointing.
Right. And then in the fight itself that you had with Abby, you know, what do you think was misinterpreted so badly?
I wouldn't say fight.
Okay, confrontation or conflict. Do you think that, what do you think was misinterpreted about it?
I'd go with conversation.
Okay.
But I don't think there was too much that was misinterpreted. I called Abby's actions weak, and then it was misinterpreted by some people that I called Abby weak. And, you know, as I mentioned, the plan only needed some discipline to stick to it, and her reasons that she did it for the good of the tribe was just ridiculous. And, you know, if she had said, well, I wanted to change alliances because I didn't like you guys or whatever other reason, I would have been willing to accept that. But it just kind of didn't make sense to me that, you know, when you're in an alliance, you're in a solid position in the game, that you change it to move to another alliance that still puts you in the same position where you already are. It wasn't as though it was advancing her position in the game.
Right. And then obviously Nova goes home at that tribal council. So why do you think that they took her out before you?
I don't think Nova had a lot of flexibility with her strategy, and she was fairly strict when it came to what they called Nova's Kitchen and the rules of Nova's Kitchen, which a couple of people didn't like.
Right. And then in that final vote, obviously the discussion was whether Ross might flip to be with you. How realistic do you think it was that he might have flipped back to vote with you guys?
It was very unrealistic.
Okay.
That was sort of a last-ditch effort, and I actually said to to Simon and ET that if they felt the best move for them going forward was to vote for me, then I'd be fine with that.
Right. And, you know, there was some talk online about, you know, you said that you didn't want to really deal with the outwit portion of the game at Tribal Council. But at the same time, we did see you outwitting and, you know, making that alliance at the beginning. So was that kind of strategy to say that publicly, or was that something you really didn't really want to deal with in the game?
Well, it was both of those things together. The putting that alliance together of seven people at the start meant that we had the numbers straight away and we didn't have to worry about the outwit part of the game.
Right. And then just, you know, looking back maybe even on Abby flipping or kind of in the days after, do you look back like there was one thing you really could have done to turn it around, like one major regret from the game?
I think in the sporting alliance, we could have been a little bit more active as far as talking about what decisions need to be made, why we're making them, and letting people voice their opinions on everything. But at the same time, when you've got seven people in a group and you're trying not to let the others know what you're doing, it's very difficult for everybody to talk to everybody. So, you know, sometimes it was just like, well, yeah, this is what we're doing. And five people out of the seven were fine with being sort of told what to do. I certainly was. I didn't need any justification as to why the group was doing something. I was told to do it, I just do it. So I probably would have put a bit more thought into what people might be feeling and whether they need justification and input into decisions that are being made for the team.
Yeah, because we saw your strategy was really not to be the leader, which I think is the right move in Australian Survivor. So, you know, you seemed, as you said, happy to not be making those calls. Can you talk to us a bit about why you chose that strategy?
Well, you know, being the leader puts a target on your back in Survivor, and, you know, you're there with a whole bunch of champions. So I don't think anybody wants to be the person that's sort of leading the other champions, if you know what I mean. And so anybody who had a strong opinion on something, like at the first vote, we all decided to vote for Pia and the deal was done. And then Nova came along and said, well, no, I'm not happy with that. I want to vote out Anastasia. And we could all tell that she was, you know, fairly strong with that opinion. And we all said, oh, well, it doesn't really matter too much either way. So we'll give you what you want and we'll vote out Anastasia. So, you know, I didn't see why there needed to be a leader. If somebody wanted to voice their opinion, then everyone was prepared to listen.
Right. And then, you know, Simon and ET seem to be trying to blend in with this new majority. Why do you think that you and Nova were targeted over those two?
Well, I think Simon and ET were a little less opinionated, most certainly when it came to the conversation that I had with Abby. That put my name ahead of Simon and ET's to vote out first.
Yeah. And what is your background with the show? Like, how did you get involved with Survivor?
I was asked to go on the show and I was pretty excited about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was, as I said, great to have you on for the time we had you. You actually won our podcast award for the best player of week one. So I know you've won Olympic gold, but that's a pretty high honor in our books. So,
well, I didn't know that, but yeah, that's something to take with me after the exit last night.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very high honor. So, thank you for coming on to talk with us, and you know, it was great to watch you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Okay, cheers. Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, everybody, there you have it. Recap with Josh Wiggler. Two exit interviews, three episodes of Australian Survivor this week. It is a lot, but it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for getting this far. Thank you for listening. Next week, three episodes again. Surprise mystery guest, which should be fun. They'll definitely be good, whoever it is. #WombatsVisor, and we will see you next week. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.